A Voyage to Paradise. Chapter 64. The U.S. Navy cruiser Anzio turned north from her station off the United Arab Emirates, 100 miles inside the Strait of Hormuz, and headed on a dissecting path across the Persian Gulf. Though far from being the largest ship in the Gulf, the Ticonderoga-class Aegis cruiser was easily the most deadly. With its phased array radar system housed in the ship's boxy superstructure, the ship could detect and target enemy craft on land, sea, and air within a 200-mile radius. At the push of a button, one of 121 Tomahawk or Standard missiles could be dispatched from its vertical launch system housed below decks, obliterating the offending target within seconds. The high-tech arsenal was managed by the Combat Information Center, a dark control room in the depths of the ship. Under its dim blue overhead lights, Captain Robert Bunns studied one of several large projection screens mounted on the wall. The surrounding region of the Gulf was displayed in multiple colors, overlaid with various geometric shapes and symbols that danced across the screen in slow motion. Each symbol represented a ship or aircraft tracked by the radar system. One shape, a highlighted red ball, was inching toward the Strait of Hormuz from left to right across the ship's path. 12 miles to intercept, sir, reported a nearby sailor, one of several electronics experts seated at computer stations around the bay. Steady as she goes, Bunns replied. A studious but witty line officer highly admired by the crew, Bunns had enjoyed his current tour of duty in the Gulf. Aside from missing his wife and two children, he found Gulf duty to be an invigorating challenge, enlivened with occasional danger. "We'll cross Iranian waters in 3 miles," warned a youthful tactical operations officer standing at his side. "They are clearly tracking the Iranian coast for safety. After Karg Island, I don't think the Iranians are up for harboring these guys," Bunns replied. "Pat, I think I'll watch the show from the bridge. You have the CIC. Aye, Captain. We'll be dialed in just in case." Bunns made his way out of the darkened command center and up to the bridge, which was bathed in bright sunlight reflecting off the Gulf's waters. A dark-haired officer stood near the helm with a pair of binoculars to his eyes, observing a black vessel on the water ahead. "Is that our target, Commander?" the captain asked. Commander Brad Knight, the Anzio's chief operations intelligence officer, nodded in reply. "Yes, sir. That's the drill ship. Air Recon has confirmed she's the Bayan Star out of Kuala Lumpur. The same vessel that our satellites pegged at Rosh Tanura and Karg Island prior to the earthquakes." Knight gazed down at the cruiser's forward deck, spotting a contingent of Marines in assault gear, prepping a pair of Zodiac boats.
"Boarding party looks to be in order, sir."
"Well, let's see if the Bayan Star will play ball." Bunns stepped to a seated radio communications officer and issued a command. The cruiser began hailing the drill ship, first in English, then in Arabic, ordering the vessel to stop and heave to for boarding and inspection. The drill ship ignored the calls in both languages. "No change in speed," a radar operator reported.
"Can't believe those Hornets didn't get their attention," Knight said.
A pair of F-A-18s from the aircraft carrier Ronald Reagan had tracked the drill ship for the prior hour, buzzing it constantly.
"Guess we'll have to do things the old-fashioned way and fire a shot across their bow," Bunns said. The cruiser had a pair of 5-inch guns capable of such a shot, and much more.
The cruiser closed to within 2 miles of the drill ship when the radar operator barked, "She's slowing, sir." Bunns leaned over and watched the radar screen, seeing the drill ship's blip cease movement on its southwesterly course. "Bring us alongside. Have the boarding party stand by." The sleek gray cruiser angled to the northeast, pulling even with the drill ship with a half mile of water separating the two vessels. The Marines were quickly loaded into the Zodiacs and lowered over the side. As they began motoring toward the drill ship, Knight suddenly alerted Buns.
Captain, I see two boats in the water off the enemy's stern. I think the crew is abandoning ship.
Buns picked up a pair of binoculars and gazed at the drill ship. Two lifeboats filled with crewmen in black fatigues were making their way from the ship. Buns swung his binoculars toward the dilapidated vessel just in time to spot several puffs of white smoke rise from the lower levels.
They mean to scuttle her, he said.
Call back the boarding party.
As the Anzio's crew watched with surprise, the drill ship quickly began settling low in the water. In just a few minutes, the salty waters of the Persian Gulf began washing over the ship's bow. As the bow sunk lower, the stern rose higher into the air until the flooded ship knifed to the bottom with a sudden whoosh. Knight shook his head as he watched the trail of bubbles and foam dissipate over the ship's grave.
Pentagon's not going to like that. They were eager for us to capture her intact. Had some big-time intel curiosity about the technology aboard.
We still got her crew, Buns said, nodding toward the two lifeboats, which were headed willingly toward the cruiser.
And the Pentagon can still have the ship if they want her. She's just 300 feet deep in Iranian waters, he added with a grin.